the Q, the O, and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Merrick and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
Well, Sam Cosentino, here we are once again. This is the Junior Podcast for all you CHL fans out there. Don't forget, Brad Treliving, GM of the Calgary Flames, will be aboard. Why will he be aboard? You ask Sam Cosentino, because last week he made news by sending Sam Bennett back to the Kingston and Frontenacs of the Ontario Hockey League. He will play tonight, as a matter of fact, for those Fronts in Belleville at the Yardman Arena against the Belleville Bulls. This was, as they say, Sam, a no-brainer, I'm guessing?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to get Brad's take on it. But, you know, I kind of opined last week, Jeff, that I figured it was all about just leaving options open, you know, because you just you never know what's going to happen. You leave your options open and you don't commit one way or the other. So I'm sure in the back of his mind, I think all the way along, he was thinking that this was the wise thing to do. And it is the wise thing to do. And it's, you know, it's good for Kingston. It's good for Sam Bennett. And ultimately down the road, most importantly for Brad Treliving, it's going to be good for the Flames. So
it'll be fantastic. And, you know, I don't think it's a... I don't necessarily think that at the end of this season for the Kingston Frontenacs and Sam Bennett that he automatically goes to the American Hockey League team. I spoke to someone last week who said, don't be surprised. The Flames have a little bit of a run. Don't be surprised to see Sam Bennett up with the big squad.
Yeah, that would be an interesting scenario, and I'm sure that's something we can touch on for sure with Brad. But, you know, I guess there is some merit in that, because when you think about his rehab, you think about, you know, the injury, the surgery and all that, he has spent a lot of time in Calgary. And while, you know, the Flames are on the road, I understand that, you know, obviously Sam wouldn't have been hanging out with the team, but I'm sure he's very familiar with everybody there from the training staff on through the rest of the dressing room. So I don't think it would be a stretch if that were the case. You know, Jeff, it's funny. I had a conversation with a guy today and, you know, what's going on with the Edmonton Oilers? And I said, well, the Edmonton Oilers have really good players. They just brought them along too early. And so you hope Calgary doesn't go down that road. I mean, it's worked out pretty well with Monahan. You know, but still very early in his career. But I don't know. For me, it's the longer you leave him, the better. Not as OAs, obviously, but you got to get him to their 19-year-old year, I think. And especially in a guy like Bennett's case, where you're missing that extra year because you've been – it's almost an entire year that he's been out. So you see any issues with him going to the big club if it's all said and done?
No, not at all. If he can hang there in the high rent district too. You know, one of the things about hanging around Calgary for so long too, and Sam Bennett mentioned this as he was making his way from Calgary back to Kingston, what it really helped the kid with is seeing how NHLers prepare and taking that knowledge back to the Ontario Hockey League. Just seeing day in and day out what these guys do at the next level helps this guy immensely. So, you know, I don't see any issue with Sam Bennett going for a cup of coffee with the Calgary Flames at the end of the season. I do, and listen, man, if you mentioned the Edmonton Oilers, if they had a do-over, okay, if they're allowed to do over the decision on Leon Draisaitl, who we just saw in Friday Night Hockey against the Victoria Royals, there's no way he's playing past nine games with the Edmonton Oilers. He's going back to junior hockey.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of people that I talked to even around the rink on Friday night who said the same thing. He shouldn't have been there in the first place. And you know, they've done right by Darnell Nurse and sending him back, although he's injured right now. But ultimately, it really is the best thing. And sometimes for National Hockey League teams, that's a difficult thing to see, because you're balancing, you know, the job of the coach, the job of the GM. You're balancing the job of your scouts and your head scouts, because you want your picks to play to prove your worth. But ultimately, if you have an organization that's all on the same page, where no one's necessarily worried about their job, and I'll use Winnipeg as that example, you know, you're better off doing the right thing and extending the guy's stay.
You know, you look at what sending Sam Reinhart back to the Kootenay Ice did for that organization, and sending Sam Bennett back to the Kingston Frontenacs certainly helps that organization. That's a team that's had a hard time scoring goals. I talked to Paul McFarland on the weekend. He said the plan was to load up a big line. So it's Sam Bennett, it's Spencer Watson, it's Lawson Crouse. That's what they go out as. And I can't help but thinking the one guy who's really impacted in a big year for him, more so than anybody else, is Lawson Crouse, who now, all of a sudden, this is with all due respect to Juho Lamico, is getting a bona fide number one center to play with. This guy wins. Lawson Crouse wins this one going away.
Yeah, and you know, he's a sniper, and I think you're really going to get to see that now because he's not going to always be the guy who has to do it all himself. So that's going to be a really interesting scenario. You know, Bennett plays a hard, heavy physical game. We'll see how quickly he gets reengaged because of the shoulder, but you'd have to assume that he's 100%. And that's going to be deadly because Watson's a sniper. Bennett can score goals, and Kraus is a sniper. So you got three guys who can really, really, you know, shoot the puck. And I'm wondering, Jeff, that while Paul McFarlane is thinking that off the top, that if somehow he doesn't split up three shooters, you know, down the road, or maybe even into the start of the playoffs, just to you know, for puck distribution, for minutes, for balance, for matching, for the opposition to have to match against you, so on and so forth. But originally, you know, try it out, see what happens, and then go from there.
And now all of a sudden, the Kingston Frontenacs become a tough out in the playoffs and become a team that you probably don't want to face in the first round. We've been talking a lot about the Niagara Ice Dogs, and for good reason. And we continue to see third period comebacks and late game heroics for the Niagara Ice Dogs. Now all of a sudden, Sam Bennett is that shark in the water in Kingston. When you look at the efforts of Lucas Parisini, who's been fantastic in net for Kingston so far this year, all of a sudden I'm saying to myself, I'm not so sure that I want Kingston in the first round anymore.
Yeah, that's going to be a real difficult proposition. And, you know, it looks like, and you'd have to think that it's almost cemented now that Barry is going to be that second seed. I mean, there's, I don't know, 8 points maybe, or 7 points separating Barry and Ottawa. And in North Bay, you know, they might have a say in things too. But it looks to me as if Barry's cemented in that second spot. There'll be some jockeying for third and fourth. But if you're second and you're Barry, that's likely going to be your first round matchup, the Kingston Frontenacs.
Okay, so around the CHL, we'll rewind to the action that we had on Sportsnet over the weekend. Friday night hockey, the Kelowna Rockets. We mentioned Leon Draisaitl. He was a late game hero for the Kelowna Rockets. As they kind of pulled one out of the hats, in a lot of ways, that was Victoria's game. And at the end of it, they did split the series over the weekend, the third game tonight at Prospera Place. But your thoughts on our game on Friday? It took the third period. It took a big goal by Leon Draisaitl. It cemented away from the number two team in the country.
You know, Jeff, I got to tell you, with all the hype going in, I was rather disappointed in that game. I found it to be a very, I don't know, lackadaisical game, I guess. You know, and both coaches, when we spoke to them before the game, seemed certain that, you know, that it was going to be a battle. The teams obviously don't like each other very much. You know, you're playing in the same division, you're in the same conference. There is a possibility that you meet, you know, in the playoffs here in round two. So, I was expecting a lot more physically, out of that game. And Victoria really took the play to Kelowna early on, and where they failed to capitalize were on those several power plays. I think it was in the second period, and failed to gain any separation there. And when you give a team like Kelowna the opportunity to bounce back on you, and you know what, Jeff? I watched the London Kitchener game last night, and I felt the very same thing. London was down 3-0 to Kitchener. Kitchener's on home ice. They get one before the end of the second and go into the third down 3-1. And I just felt to myself, I don't know. You can't give teams that much slack. You can't sit on leads, and you have to take advantage of your opportunities. Victoria didn't do that Friday night. Kitchener didn't do it last night. Both of them wound up on the losing end. Victoria in regulation, and Kitchener in overtime.
What do you make of the Kelowna Rockets, who once again, for whatever reason, I don't know what it is, must be between the ears, something, seem to struggle when they're on national television? And if they're going to win the MasterCard Memorial Cup, they're going to be on national television. It just seems as if something happens when the big cameras show up for Kelowna.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's more coincidence than anything else. I mean, it's funny because the coaching staff was well aware of it and let us know it when we walked into the room to speak with them before the game. Danny Lambert and Chris Millett, Travis Crickard there, you know, they let us know about it. But I think it's more coincidence than anything, Jeff. Like, if I had to go back over my 10 years and doing games with Kelowna on TV, I got to say they're probably playing 750 hockey.
Yeah.
So maybe it's more Lambeau's fault. It's more Dan Lambert's fault than it has anything to do with us.
So, take that, rookie coach.
Yeah.
Okay, so Sunday afternoon, we head to Rexall. You and RJ and Falsey head to Rexall. 10,000 people in the stands. A really nice crowd. Looked fantastic on television. It's the Medicine Hat Tigers. Yes, they've struggled going into that one. I believe they're 2-8 in their last 10 going into Sunday afternoon's game. And the first thing you notice is, of course, Trevor Cox serving the last game of a 3-game suspension. Smallish forwards, true. You wonder where the stingy defense went. I looked at that Medicine Hat team, and Edmonton won, by the way, if you didn't see it. 5-1 is the final score. I thought that Edgar Skolda was outstanding. Matt Zeller, I thought, was excellent in the game as well. You look at that game and you say to yourself, are we watching the Medicine Hat Tigers just unravel in front of our eyes? I mean, what was the cushion that they had for top spot? Something like 11 points at one point. And
now
the Medicine Hat Tigers, that thread just continues to unravel the sweater.
And, you know, it doesn't help that Calgary's been playing like a house on fire. I mean, they've really started to turn it up. The Hitmen won again last night. They've won 5 straight. So they're really rocking and rolling. At the same time, Medicine Hat is going downhill. And, you know, I asked Sean Clouston about that Sunday before the game. I said, you have to take something positive out of it in that you've gone 2 wins in your last 8 games. And yet you're still, at that point, they were still technically in first place because they had one more win than Calgary. So things have obviously changed now. And he said, yeah, you know, it's good. It's, you know, maybe we're playing a little over our heads. The schedule is really fascinating for Medicine Hat because they played, I want to say, 15 games in the first 7 weeks. So they weren't really top-end loaded. And then they've been back-end loaded ever since. And I don't know, Jeff. When I watched their hockey club, at times it just seemed like they lacked a little passion, a little fire. Not used to what I'm seeing out of Medicine Hat. So obviously we caught them in a downturn on Sunday. But now they're in that precarious position. And if things keep going the way they're going, who knows if Red Deer sneaks up into that second spot and steals home ice away in round number 1. So they're going to be a fascinating team to watch. The one thing about Medicine Hat is they're consistently the kind of the same roster. Smallish guys that skate well, that score, that have to work hard in order to have success. And that's the other thing Sean Clouston told us. You know, our guys need to, you know, we have enough talent, but our guys need to work hard in order to win. And if we're not the hardest working team on the ice, we're not going to win. And there were stretches where they were better than Edmonton, but overall, I thought Edmonton was the better team on Sunday. What were your impressions, Jeff, of Medicine Hat, you know, after being in the top 10 for a good chunk of the year?
First thing I noticed was how small they were up front and how they got handled by the Edmonton Oil Kings defense. And, you know, the number 1 scorer, Trevor Cox, as I mentioned, was out. So that takes a big stick out of the lineup. For me, the first thing that I noticed was they got pinched really quick. They're really small. And unless they really move their feet, they're not going to really get much going. And you can look back at the history. We joked about it in the opening. Like, you go back to Steve Segera, you know, the smallish forward back in the Medicine Hat Tiger, Kelly Rudy days. Like, they've always sort of, you know, outside of, you know, Trevor Linden, of course, wasn't a small man. But they've had some really small players. I don't know if it's a conscious thing or if it's just a fluke. But the song remains the same for the Medicine Hat Tigers. Really small, highly skilled, mind you. Small up front.
Yep. You know what I think, though, Jeff? I think they kind of realize they're in a spot that they recruit and they draft and they list players that they think are going to be Medicine Hat Tigers for a long time. In other words, I think they do a really good job of building junior hockey clubs. And yes, you know, obviously there's some great players that have come out of there, but they really do a good job of building junior hockey clubs. And so oftentimes when you look over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, you're likely to find a Medicine Hat Tiger overage player amongst the top 10 in scores. It's just kind of the way it works out. I guess the other kind of takeaway I'd love to hear from your end of things was, what did you think about Edmonton, defending MasterCard Memorial Cup champ, a team that's obviously changed a whole lot? What were your impressions of the Oil Kings?
I was surprised they scored. They put up a 5 spot against Medicine Hat, who's one of the stingiest teams in the entire Western Hockey
League.
So
were they.
And there's the Oil Kings. And, you know, you look around the last time, you know, the burning memories in my brain, you know, are that big win against Guelph in the MasterCard Memorial Cup final. And it's, you know, Samuelson, who's, you know, a dynamic player. It's Mitch Mraz, who's a dynamic player. Like Griffin Reinhardt, of course. A lot of high-end skill, and we knew they'd take a step back and would be handed over to the Brett Pollocks of the world, and of course Edgar Skolda is in there as an OA. I thought that, I mean, again, it's a 1-game sample. I thought that we would see more of a significant drop-off in talent. Maybe just, as you mentioned, we caught Medicine Hat on a bad day. But I was impressed. I was impressed with Oil Kings. And listen, anytime you have a netminder like Tristan Jarry in there, you're always going to be in a game. But I was impressed with the Oil Kings. I thought the drop-off in play would be much more, and the new coach behind the bench as well. So maybe not a new system because he was an assistant before, but tweaks to the lineup, some players who last year had supporting roles, now in leading roles. I thought we'd see a team that looked like they were more in transition than they really are.
Yeah, I thought so too, and I was surprised, pleasantly surprised by how they played. I mean, the one area of strength is their back end. They got a lot of, you know, veterans back there in their top three, and they have Tristan Jarry. So they become a dangerous proposition in the playoffs simply for that reason alone, that they're good on the back. But where they're going to find their success is Mads Zeller and Edgar Skalda. If those guys can score, then they'll be fine. But quite obviously, I think, you know, between the two of them, they were under 10 goals combined going into that game on Sunday afternoon. So that's not going to cut it. Both of those guys need to play like they're 35 goal guys, and that will give Edmonton a chance. But we are really good in the back. Steve Hamilton's he's a dynamite coach. I mean, I thought that they did a good job protecting their own line. They took away the neutral zone and the speed away from Medicine Hat. So I was impressed with their game planning for sure on Sunday.
I'll tell you what, I know we're focusing a lot on the Western Hockey League right now. We were just there over the weekend, so you can understand why. But if you're a fan of the Western Hockey League, what a bonanza tonight is for you, okay? We just talked about the Medicine Hat Tigers. They face off tonight against the Brandon Wheat Kings. That one should be a dandy. Look at the Calgary Hitmen. They're in the midst of an 11-game road trip we talked about last time because curling is in town, affecting both the Hitmen and the Flames. They face off against the Don't Look Now, But They're Awesome Again, Portland Winterhawks. And then we have the Kelowna Rockets back at home at Prospera Place. They got back on the ferry, as did the Victoria Royals. It is Victoria facing off against Kelowna. So those are just three of the big games tonight in the Western Hockey League. If you had to choose one of those, Sam Cosentino, the Hat versus the Wheaties, the Hitmen and the Winterhawks, or the Kelowna Rockets and the Victoria Royals, I would go Hitman Hawks. What about you?
I'd probably go Victoria Kelowna because we're not there. I mean, they split that weekend series with Victoria winning the back end 5-2, and I think it's going to be a little bit different ball game tonight without the bright lights and big TV on. Although that game might end up being on Shaw. I'd have to double check that one. But that would be the one that I tune into.
All right, so Sam, coming up this Friday, we have the London Knights, one of our favorite barns, Budweiser Gardens. It's a wonderful place to be, facing off against the Guelph Storm, who, bad news, season-ending shoulder surgery for OA defenseman Zach Leslie. That's it for the OHL career. Your thoughts on the Guelph Storm? Robbie Fabry, on his way back, won't be there Friday, but nonetheless making his way back. The Guelph Storm facing off against the London Knights, led by that guy that every time we turn around seems to be putting up a five spot somewhere, and that's Mitch Marner. Your thoughts, Sammy?
Yeah, that one's tough to handle for Guelph. I mean, he's such a key piece back there. And to be honest with you, Jeff, from what I understand, and I could be wrong, but I understand he's going to play through the weekend and then have the surgery.
So is that right?
It's one of those situations. Yeah. Now, that's what I was told yesterday. Pretty good source. So we'll see how that plays out. You know, maybe it's a matter of they can't schedule the surgery in time. It's one of those things that needs to get done that you could probably, you know, play with if you had to. But at some point, it has to get done. And I think the LA Kings intervened here and said that would be our preference. And, you know, that seems like what. That's what's going to happen. But, you know, I watched London last night, and you put those top three guys in a line with Marner, Dvorak, and Domi. It's simply deadly. Yeah. But, you know, you got Rupert, Berisha. You know, there's a couple other guys that can still do some damage. So they're an interesting team. I mean, they went from Gigavots to Parsons last night, and Gigavots gave up three goals on, I don't know, 20-some shots. Parsons came in and closed the door and ended up being a star in that game. And, you know, Jake Patterson was really good, but London Guelph, Midwest Division, they too hate each other. So it on paper it should be a good matchup. It's going to be tough for Guelph without Leslie, especially defending against that trio, and especially defending against the guy you mentioned, and Mitch Marner, who's just been deadly. So that's going to be a difficult proposition. But I always like watching Justin Nichols play because he's a battler. He's a smaller guy. He knows he's up against it. He answered all the questions all the way up until the MasterCard Memorial Cup Championship game last year, and you probably could have pinned less of that game on him than you could have the rest of the team around him. So I'm looking forward to watching him play and seeing how Guelph fares without Leslie, without Fabry, and obviously a much, much different team here this year. But, you know, there's a good chance that those guys, there is the possibility that they'd end up being, well, I guess not. I guess London's going to end up being in that third spot. But I was going to say it could be a 4-5 in a first-round matchup. But Kitchener will likely end up in that fifth hole with either London or Guelph in the four hole. So you're looking at probably a Midwest Division first-round matchup, you know, with one of those two clubs involved. But it's all, you know, good. It's a good matchup. It's a Midwest matchup, so it should be good, you know.
And you know what? It has a player that I personally love watching. You hate to play against him. You love it when he's on your team. Fans love him. He's a cult hero in Guelph, and that's Tyler Bertuzzi, who has 41 goals and 87 points after 58 games. There was some speculation he would be moved at trade deadline, as they might have gone for, hey, you know what, let's just burn this thing to the ground and build towards the future. They traded a lot of pieces. Ben Harper is off to the Barry Colts, etc. But Tyler Bertuzzi, who fans love, he has, at times, Sam, almost an awkward style of play about him, you know, by way of body positioning.
Yeah.
He's at those bamboo shoots under the fingernails, tough guy to play against. And, listen, the Detroit Red Wings have a nifty one on their hands there in Tyler Bertuzzi. He's at the end of the day, he's just a fun player to watch, Sam.
Oh, yeah, he's great to watch because he really plays the role well. Because he'll throw a legit hit at you, and then when nobody's looking, he'll stick you, or, you know, he'll skate by after the whistle and whack you in the back of the legs, or do something a little untoward. And, you know, you try and yap at him, he'll yap back at you, but he also has the ability to respond with his goal-scoring ability and playmaking ability. So he's a really interesting prospect, Jeff, in that all the things that he does now would make him successful in the National Hockey League, but is his game going to translate? Is he going to be able to play that way, be the pest, be the guy that throws the hit, taps the guy in the back of the legs at a face-off, so on and so forth? Can he be that guy at the next level? That would be the question I would have, and you know the Detroit Red Wings are going to give him a good long look to find that out.
They will indeed. Sunday afternoon on CHL and Sportsnet, we have the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds and those same London Knights going at it, and it's our first chance this year, up close and personal, to see this juggernaut team that's only lost a pair of games going back to the trade deadline. Sault Ste. Marie is on a roll, and I'm not sure, Sam, you might look at the Oshawa Generals, but with all due respect to the Erie Otters, I'm not sure who can stop this team.
Yeah, they're going to be a real difficult out. There's no question about that. Halvorsen's really playing well right now. But they're banged up, Jeff. That's the one thing I'll say about their hockey club. They're really banged up right now. I don't think we'll see Nurse on Sunday. I know Richie was kind of going through the paces after the little bit of a brouhaha against Kitchener. I think Ganley, you know, he's questionable. I think Spears is questionable. And I know this for a fact. I spoke to Sheldon Keefe, I guess it was yesterday. And with the way their scheduling's gone, he sent his guys home for a couple of days. He said, you know, you're banged up, you're homesick, we've had a tough winter up here in the Sioux, we just got through 10 games in 17 days. Take a couple of days off, go home, get refreshed, come back Thursday, get ready to work for weekend games Friday and Sunday. So I thought that was a really good coaching tactic. Just to give your guys the leeway to do that. I mean, they're playing well right now, and that's what you do. You reward your teams that are playing well. They've won seven straight, and you know they're barely unbeaten at home. They're a really good hockey club, and you and I both know about Sheldon and how highly regarded his work has been in the last couple of years in Sault Ste. Marie. So they're going to be a really tough out, Jeff. And I don't know. I mean, I think last week you mentioned something about the coach of the year for Sheldon Keefe. I think you're going to be on the money there.
You know, and it's interesting, too, when you look at that move to send the kids home from a couple of days, you wonder if that's a byproduct of Sheldon being a former player in this league himself, having gone through it before, knowing what it's like, being able to read the room and saying, you know what, these guys need a break. They're probably sick of hearing my voice. The best thing right now is for us to just break off for a couple of days. Go heal, go be with your families, go hang out with your pals for a couple of days, and then come back and put your boots on and get back to work. I can't help but thinking that's just a byproduct of Sheldon Keefe having played in the OHL.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call. I think that's a really good call. You know, I was reading a piece in the Toronto Star today about Steve Staios with the mentorship of Gardner and Riley with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And you can't help but think one of the things that, Riley said especially, or hey, this guy's played in this era. He knows what the game's all about. He's been there. He's done that. And I think I can correlate that to what you're talking about with Sheldon Keefe. I've been there, done that. I know it can be a huge grind. And, you know, when you look at the what they're facing, the travel that they have to face in the playoffs, which is the toughest of any team in the Ontario Hockey League, hey, give the guys a little bit of a breather here. And, you know, sometimes it's nice to get away from it. I know, like working in it, Jeff, sometimes I just like to get away from it. I don't like to watch a game, or I don't want to know what's going on for a day or so after you've had enough. And I think 10 games in 17 days would be that point for me.
I think that's why you did the podcast last week from Florida. I believe Sam Cosentino got out of town quickly. we'll finish up this segment and talk about the QMJHL, the Quebec League, and a big matchup, one with huge ramifications and one that you can read as a measuring stick for both teams in a lot of ways. Rimouski, after dropping a pair, beat the Quebec Ramparts at Le Colisée. You mentioned 10,000 for a game on Sunday, 10,000 in attendance for this one as well. Rimouski 3, the Ramparts no score. Quebec at home in that one. Huge game or just one game in the schedule, Sam?
Well, huge game, I think, because their last game, Quebec's last game, they were shut out 6-0.
That's right.
So they've been outscored 9-0 in two games over the weekend against Val-d'Or and against Rimouski. So that would be somewhat concerning to me. Although, you know, when you look at the 10-game stretch, I think they've won 7 of those. So they're okay in that regard. But, man, oh, man. I think both guys got it, if I'm not mistaken. I think Booth was in goal against Val-d'Or, and I want to say Fuchs was in there last night against Rimouski. So, you know, you got to start scoring goals. I mean, you don't have all that firepower, that top nine, without scoring some goals. So those guys are going to have to get back to work. They're going to have to get back to playing that team game, that run-and-gun game that allows, you know, you to take care of the defensive zone but really allows you to explode offensively. They got to get back there. And, you know, I really still think that this is a team trying to figure itself out, Jeff. And that goes back to our visit there a couple of weeks ago.
You know, you mentioned, by the way, yeah, Fucali did play 25 saves in that one on 28 shots, and his Ramparts get blanked 3-0 by the Rimouski Oceanic. Something we should have talked about last week on the podcast, Kurt Echegaray getting the C on the jersey. A surprise to you, or was that inevitable?
No, I think that one was inevitable. I know they wanted to kind of wait it out and see how things went and made sure that they were doing their due diligence and that no one else was going to step up into that role. But you have to think of a guy who's been there through a lot, you know, he's been there for a long time. He's been through a lot of personal adversity with some health issues. So he knows what it's like to be resilient and whatever else. But you couldn't really do it to Fucali, right? You're not going to Luongo Fucali and make him the captain. You're not going to do it to Matt Murphy because he was just brought in. You're not going to do it to Anthony Duclair because he was just returned, you know, a month ago. So you start going down the list. It's not going to be Timoshov. It's not going to be Kachev. All right, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? And I think the logical guy there was Echegaray for me. And Philippe Boucher, Martin LaPerriere are just kind of waiting for things to sort themselves out before making it official.
All right, so on that, we'll take a break. Again, thanks for listening, listening to it at sportsnet.ca, downloading it at iTunes. Thanks for listening to our podcast this week. Sam and I will hit a quick break. We'll come back with the GM of the Calgary Flames, who made CHL news last week, sending Sam Bennett back to the Kingston Frontenacs of the OHL. Brad Treliving joins us here in a couple of moments on Junior.
Hi, I'm Dion Phaneuf of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I played my junior hockey for the Red Deer Rebels of the Western Hockey League.
Sam, you might be saying to yourself, why is an NHL general manager on a CHL podcast? And the answer is quite simple. The man who made huge CHL news last week is Calgary Flames GM Brad Treliving by sending Sam Bennett down to the OHL's Kingston Frontenacs. He joins us now. Brad, thanks so much for being aboard today. As we were saying off the top of the program, from an outsider's point of view, this one really seemed like a no-brainer. How was it to you?
Well, I mean, ultimately, we think it's the best move for Sam and for us moving forward. Now, having said that, obviously, you know, it was unfortunate. Sam had the shoulder surgery in early October and really has spent the majority of the time with us, was with us rehabbing it, and went home, spent some time with his family over the holidays, and then came back in the new year. And then really for the last 2 months has been outside of playing games, been part of our organization. So we think that this young guy is going to be a really big part of our team moving forward. So obviously the proper consideration was given to the options that were available to us. But when you look at it and step back from the emotion and the excitement and all those types of things, and look at a young 18-year-old player that hasn't played, you know, really since the preseason, has gone through a rehabilitation from a major surgery. We just felt this was the best and wisest move, and we're excited Sam's going to be back up and playing.
Brad, how do you feel? How would you compare him to Sean Monahan? I mean, very similar kind of career paths to this point. How would you compare those two players?
Yeah, Sam, it's an interesting question. Like, we're excited that we got both of them, first and foremost. When yeah. you look around and trying to build a team, you know, having strength down the middle is just, you can't have success without that. So having two young centermen like that, we think is really exciting for us moving forward. They're a little bit different in terms of their style. I think, you know, obviously Sean's a big body, he's real good on both sides of the puck, a real cerebral type player, you know, is now at the ripe old age of 19 and 20, has been back-to-back 20 goal years in the NHL. Where Sam, there's more, maybe a little more dynamic, and that's by no means taking anything away from Sean. You know, he's a driver. You know, his game is more, you know, sort of creating and cutting into seams. A real competitive edge to them. So I think in a lot of ways their games complement each other. You know, Sam plays at a real high pace. So I think that, you know, moving forward, they're going to be the centerpieces of our team, especially up the middle moving forward, and we're excited to have them both.
Brad, what was the conversation like when you spoke with, and I'm assuming it was Doug Gilmore, when you called Kingston and said, we're sending Sam back?
A lot of screaming and yelling and high-fiving. No, it was good. We tried to keep Doug in formed really all the way. And as I said to him, you know, I've said it many times. Obviously, this is locally in Calgary. It's been a story I've been asked about a lot. And as I said to Doug, we're not, and it was the truth, we're not focused on where and when. You know, I think once you get ahead of yourself and saying, well, he's going to go here, he's going to go there, and this is when he's going to be play. Our focus is really just on the process of getting him, you know, ready to play, making sure the rehab went well. Sam worked his tail off. I mean, these aren't things that you drop and say, let's have a shoulder surgery and go from there. But I think it went as good as you could go under the circumstances. You know, on the ice, he was involved in all our meetings. He was involved around our team. He saw how players prepare. You know, all the things that young players don't get to see, they get to hear about, and until they're in the league, then they get to experience it. Well, he got to experience all that. Off the ice, obviously, he was focused on his rehab, but it was really a chance for him to spend, you know, 3 or 4 months with our strength and conditioning coach people that, you know, I think he put on 10, 11, 12 pounds of muscle. He's really, you know, he used the time effectively. And so we kept Doug praised of everything, and then just said, you know, we're not focused on a date, we're not focused on a place right now. When we get to checking the boxes of saying, okay, you know, we were real cautious when it was time for him to play, we waited even more time, and then when it became decision time, we informed Doug, and needless to say, he was happy that he was joining back up with his team.
You know, Brad, your organization is of great interest to me from a junior perspective in that, you know, I look at the hiring of Ryan Huska. I look at the hiring of Brad Pascal, who's instrumental in World Junior and under 18 team selections. And, you know, I look at some of your players now that have been drafted in the last couple of years starting to come up and make an impact, whether it be Boma, which was, you know, I know before your time. But I'm fascinated to know from this side of things and looking, I'm pretty sure you guys have all your picks, maybe an extra fourth in there for next year. How difficult does the scenario you're in with your hockey club right now, knowing that the development is coming, knowing that there's a chance, you know, obviously for the NHL playoffs and being involved there, how difficult does it make your job at this time of year with the trade deadline and where you are from a long-term perspective for your hockey club?
Yeah, it's a good point, Sam. It's hectic. you know, as we said all along here, obviously the play of our team this year, you're balancing your sort of master to two slaves here, slave to two masters, if you will. You want to help your team. You know, that's we're looking at opportunities to help us here for the stretch drive and those types of things, but it can't be at the expense of the long-term view of our team. You know, as most teams, we very much value picks and you know, not just first-round picks, you know, all the picks. This is a deep draft coming up, and we're still in a development and an accumulation stage in terms of getting, whether it be pick assets, whether it be young player prospect assets, those types of things. So, you know, if there's a market out there that we can get involved with that can help us this year, by all means, we're looking at it and we're actively looking at it, but it can't be at the expense of what I consider the assets going out the door. We think we've, you know, we're starting to accumulate some really good young players. We're seeing a couple more that came up yesterday in Ferland and Poirier, and, you know, talk about the Sam Bennett's and, you know, the picks that we've had the last little bit. We're still at that stage, the development stage, that we want to continue to grow those. So, you know, it's a balancing act. But again, to me, it's all based upon what's the price. You know, what's the price that you're looking to have to give up to acquire something that may or may not help you in the short term. So that's the balancing act. We'd love to help ourselves now, but it cannot and will not be at the detriment of the long-term view of our club moving forward.
Brad, speaking of some of those prospects, and we talked about your first rounder last year, Sam Bennett, who you sent back to the Kingston Frontenacs. If you can give us a quick update for our listeners on a couple of other players you selected last year, specifically in the second round, netminder for Charlottetown, Mason McDonald, and big rig, Hunter Smith of the Oshawa Generals.
Yeah, both are coming along. Mason's had a good year. He's you know, they've got a. The one thing with Mason, I was up to him not too long ago, is he sees a lot of shots. some nights he probably not too happy about it. I'm ecstatic about it. I think it's great for his development. But he's playing a ton. Like I said, a lot of nights. I think he had the other night he won 3-1, 3-2. Had 52 shots, 53 shots. So big athletic goaltender, was tremendous last year at the under 18 tournament at the end of the year in April. We think he's got a real good upside to him. He continues to fill out. Real competitive player. Hunter Smith, on a really good Oshawa team, has taken a step. You know, when we picked him, it was a bit of a project pick. And when I say that, you know, people know he's a big guy. You know, he's still just sort of filling out and finding out how to move around in his body. And I think he's, you know, close to 6'7", about 220 pounds, and he's still got a lot of room to grow in terms of filling out his frame. So, you know, his production, there's been an uptick in his production, his uptick in terms of his, you know, the more opportunity in terms of the usage this year. Had a little injury there, missed a little bit of time a couple weeks back, but is in a great spot. Hopefully is going to, you know, it's a team that could go on a long playoff run here, which hopefully they will, and that'll be a great experience for him. So, both players have taken steps forward this year, and we're happy to have both.
You know, another guy that I'm very interested in is Patrick Seeloff. How's he coming along? It's been a tough year and a half. The last couple of years have been tough for him. How's he coming along, Brad?
Yeah, it has been, Sam. It's, you know, he had a, for all intents and purposes, he, you know, going into this year, he really missed the last year and a half of hockey. You know, he had an unfortunate incident last year in the American League, got an infection, I mean, became life-threatening, and really missed, I think, outside of a couple games, missed the entire year. So I look at him sort of as this as being a rookie year, 20-year-old player in the American League. I really like his competitive approach. You know, it's a real driven kid. If you've had a chance to spend any time with him, just a real heart and soul type guy. He's been good. He's battled a couple injuries this year, but for the most part, touch wood, we've been able to keep him healthy. And is like I said, what I consider going through his rookie year in the American League, which is a tough league. It's a hard league for young players. But it's been a real good development year for him. You know, he's getting lots of opportunity. You mentioned Ryan Huska. you know, we hired Ryan Huska and Todd Gill. Todd specifically working with the defenseman. So I think he's got excellent coaching, and we've seen some real progress to him. And the key for him, you know, I look back at my time in Phoenix, and it's similar, different players, but similar situation as a Connor Murphy, where you go through the period where you miss a lot of time. And, you know, the number one goal is just to get some games played in, just, you know, get some miles underneath you where you can play, you know, you can play without long absences in the lineup. So he's been able to accomplish that, and has taken a step.
Brad, we'll finish on this thought and this question. We thank you for your time. You referenced the 2015 draft a couple of moments ago. How would you characterize it? How deep is it? Where are the drop-offs? What do you like? Could you compare it to other drafts? Where are you at with this year's NHL draft?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the top end of the draft has gotten a lot of talk, and and deservedly so, but I think it is a deep draft. I mean, those things, you know, just talk with our people, and I've been out a lot and seeing, and, you know, it's like any draft. Obviously, the top end is high, but I think this is a deep draft. I think there's, and it's like, you know, it's like you say every year, you can, everybody talks about the first round. It's an important round, but you got to find, in order to have success, you got to find people outside the first round. You got to hit on that third round. You got to, that's why you try to get multiple picks, is, you know, hit on somebody in the fourth or late. Or so, you know, I think if you do the work properly, and if you can ultimately get lucky on a couple of things, you can have yourself a good couple of days. But, you know, overall, I'd consider this, especially early. There's some very, very high-end players. But I think this draft, you know, obviously a couple of years ago we were talking about a very deep draft too, but I think this one extends, you know, you can get into the 60s and beyond and be real, you know, get real good players. And, you know, the goal is to try to find them beyond that point too. But I think there's a reason why you see, even recently, as early as today, you see some deals that are made. And in some cases, a lot of those top three-round picks that are going, changing places, are in a lot of cases in 2016, which I think speaks to people's thoughts of the depth of this draft.
Be a lot of teams getting a lot of good players. Brad, thanks so much for this. Good luck at trade deadline, and good luck the rest of the way this season with the Flames.
You bet. Thanks, Brad. Thanks for having me on.
There he is, Brad Treliving, the general manager of the Calgary Flames. All right, so Sam, so this year's NHL draft in Sunrise, Brad Treliving will be tabling and sitting at the head of it, his second NHL draft. Last year, a lot of people said they hit the home run. We mentioned three of the big names, of course, Sam Bennett, who's now with Kingston, netminder with Charlottetown, is Mason McDonald and Hunter Smith. But it's not as if this team is bereft of other prospects. You touched on a few as well. And one that we maybe should have mentioned, and let's riff on him a little bit here now since we just saw him, is Austin Carroll of the Victoria Royals. I love this guy's game. I love these types of players. And if you look at the right side of the future of the Calgary Flames, between Emile Poirier, who just got called up, and we mentioned Hunter Smith, and Austin Carroll on the horizon, it looks pretty solid. You were there to watch him live. What's Austin Carroll like to watch live?
Yeah, he reminds me actually a lot of Lance Boma. A lot of Lance Boma. And then that he plays a hard physical game, drop the gloves once in a while, is not afraid to get down and dirty, go to dirty areas, but can be an effective power forward type. You know, I think the greatest compliment that I had heard is when we spoke to Dave Lowry Friday, and he said to us, hey, this guy is the prototypical power forward. And when that comes from a guy like Dave Lowry, who played that role and almost to perfection, I think that speaks volumes. And, you know, here's the other interesting part about that, Jeff, is Austin Carroll started out in the American League. And because of the great relationship that Lowry has with the Calgary Flames, and being a Hitman coach, being a Flames assistant coach, I think they entrusted him because of the way he played, because of the kind of coach he is, because of the style of game that Victoria plays. They entrusted Dave Lowry to take one of their top prospects here in Austin Carroll, put him back in as an OA into Victoria, and really get him ready for next season, because I don't know if he'll be ready. I put it this way. I don't think he's too far away. I'm not sure next year is going to be the year for him. But I think within a couple of years, within 2 years probably, you're going to see this guy having an impact in the National Hockey League. I mean, look at Lance Boma. This is the guy that I'd really compare him to, because they play a hard, heavy physical game, and they're going to give you some sneaky offense. And I think that's what Carroll's going to be like at the National Hockey League level.
Yeah, he's a nice player to watch. Okay, on that, we'll wrap things up and come back here in a couple of moments, go over the BMO CHL Top 10 of the week. Spoiler, Oshawa, still number one. Stick around.
I'm Scott Lawton from the Philadelphia Flyers. I played for the Oshawa Generals in the Ontario Hockey League.
So, Sam, we conclude the program each and every week with the BMO CHL Top 10 rankings this week. Of course, week number 22. No change in 1 and 2. That's still the Oshawa Generals and the Kelowna Rockets. Those two teams continue to roll along. But then, jumping up to number 3, the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, as banged up, as you mentioned, as they may be, they occupy the 3-hole Sheldon Keefe squad, still doing some damage in the OHL's Western Conference.
Yeah, they're... I'm so looking forward to getting up there and seeing their hockey club on Sunday. I mean, it is going to be a bit of a depleted lineup, but it's going to give you an opportunity to see some other guys do their thing. So I'm fascinated about how things are working out there, you know, with Richie and D'Angelo and the existing crew with McCann and Tolchinski and so on and so forth. So I'm really looking forward to watching this group. And I think, you know, health is going to be key. Getting their group healthy and ready to go maybe 2 or 3 games before the playoffs start, that's going to be absolutely essential, Jeff.
That's going to be huge. The Brandon Wheat Kings fall a spot from 3 to 4. The Moncton Wildcats. The Moncton Wildcats, Sam, are the top team in the QMJHL. It continues to... I know I always sort of gush about how is Blainville doing it, but the Moncton Wildcats, a top team in the QMJHL, they move up 2 spots from number 7 to number 5.
I'm here to tell you they're the real deal. And you might not think so, and the listeners might not think so, but I'm here to tell you they are the real deal. And here's why. Darren Rumble's done such a great job coaching. They've got a goaltender that's won a MasterCard Memorial Cup. They have quite possibly the best European player in the CHL. And I'll, you know, argue Ehlers and argue this guy and that guy, Bjorkstrand, whatever else. But I think in terms of complete games and playing a physical North American brand of hockey, Barbashev's got to be right there. You know, Burke has been a really nice ad. They're tough in the back. They're the real deal, guys. And I say that not just from my viewings, but from some of the people that I've talked to in the Quebec League, coaches and general managers in particular. There's been 2 sources that have told me that don't think that this is just a mirage, that they're really impressed with the Moncton Wildcats Hockey Club, Connor Garland leading the league in scoring. I mean, there's a lot of good things going on there, Jeff. They're going to be an interesting group to watch in the playoffs for sure.
A real fly under the radar team. You wonder if this is the week they cease to fly under said radar. Erie Otters in at number 6, so their positions remain the same. The Rimouski Oceanic, who, you know, dropped a pair in spectacular fashion, Sam, as you mentioned, before having the bounce back against the Quebec Ramparts. They fall from number 5 to number 7, and the Armada in there solid again at number 8, so back-to-back Q teams for 7 and 8 spot.
Hey, Jeff, you know what's cool? Next weekend, where are we? Blainville, back-to-back game.
Twice.
And Sunday. Get a good look at that group. Joel Bouchard's done a dynamite job with his hockey club there. They are in the top 10, and they're not leaving. They're not asking to leave. They're not being pushed out. They're staying.
You know, it's interesting, too. When we got the schedule at the beginning of the season, like you, I did the same thing. Looked at sort of all the games and who we have on the horizon. And I got to next weekend and saw the 2 games against B&B. And I said, oh, geez, this is supposed to be that rebuilding year for the Armada. I'm not sure how. And all of a sudden now, this is one of the weekends I'm looking forward to the most, to finally get an up-close and personal look with Blainville Boisbriand.
Yeah, against the Remparts too, so it's going to be a good measuring stick by the time they get over there. It'll be a nice measuring stick for both hockey clubs because Remparts are the hosts, Blainville's the team looking for the extra spot.
Should be good. Everett Silvertip's in at number 9, so that stays the same. And then in the number 10 spot, replacing the Medicine Hat Tigers, not exactly a surprise. We talked about it on our broadcast on Sunday afternoon, Sam. The Calgary Hitmen overtake the Medicine Hat Tigers for that 10th and final spot in the BMO CHL Top 10 rankings. Beginning of the year, I thought this was one of the teams that was going to light up the Western Hockey League. Great OAs, getting some really good goaltending from Brendan Burke, who looks so different than he did with the Portland Winterhawks. This is a team that, even though they're going through this marathon road trip, as we talk about, is really starting to fire on all cylinders, Sammy.
Oh, yeah, Jake Virtanen's, you know, he's starting to pick things up a little bit. Travis Sanheim has had an unbelievable year. You know the guy who's impressed me most, I'll tell you?
Jake Adam Bean,
the rookie defenseman.
Oh, yeah.
Nope, Jake Bean, baby. Jake Bean, keep an eye on this guy. He's something else, under 17s. He's already set the Calgary Hitmen record for points in a season by a rookie defenseman. Look out, they're a good, deep, big, tough team, and now they've all started to buy into what Mark French was selling way back in August.
All right, and the honorable mentions, the Barrie Colts, who continue to roll along. They're going to be a tough out in the OHL's Eastern Conference. The Medicine Hat Tigers, who have now fallen out of the top 10, and the surging Portland Winterhawks, where Oliver Bjorkstrand is showing why he is still one of the premier snipers in the entire league. 50 is not out of the question at all for Oliver Bjorkstrand.
Yeah, that's, they're rocking and rolling too, and they're going to be a force to be reckoned with in the playoffs. The playoff format is going to be, it's going to be kind of really different to watch this year in the Western Hockey League.
Wild card format.
I'm still trying to figure it out. Stay in the division, not stay in the division. You know, the U.S. division is likely going to pick up both of the free wild card spots in the Western Conference. So, yeah, that's going to be an interesting watch as well.
That's going to be good. Okay, on that, we'll wrap things up. Sam, we look forward to seeing the games this weekend. Both games against London, at home Friday against the Guelph Storm, on the road Sunday against Sault Ste. Marie, and the big debut of the year tonight. If you have the OHL Action Pack, or if you're watching locally in Belleville, check out the Belleville Bulls and the Kingston Frontenacs. It is the season debut of Sam Bennett, last year's third overall draft pick to the Calgary Flames. Sammy,
that one should be a
good one. What's that?
One and one for Bennett tonight.
Yep. That's what you're thinking.
Goal and assist.
Would be nice. Would be a nice way to say welcome back to the OHL. We shall stand by and see if you are correct indeed, Sam. You normally are. So on behalf of Sam Cosentino and our producer, Matt Brown, thanks so much for stopping by our little podcast today, either at sportsnet.ca or downloadable at iTunes. Thanks so much for listening. We're back next Wednesday with another edition of Junior. Have a great week.